Canto 11, Chapter 28, Jnana Yoga, or the Denomination and the Real. The Supreme Lord said, "When one understands that the world, this combination of matter and person, is based upon one and the same reality, one should refrain from praising and criticizing someone else's nature and activities. He who praises or criticizes someone else's nature and actions quickly will stray from his real interest of self-realization because he thus adheres to the falsehood of the world of opposites. A person aware of the objective diversity is just as unaware of the one reality as an embodied soul whose senses, overcome by sleep, experience the illusory reality of a dream or the death-like state of having lost consciousness. What would be good or what would be bad in this unreal, deceptive material duality that, considered by the mind and put into words, results in a false, insufficient image of reality? Even though shadows, echoes, and mirages constitute mere suggestions, they create motives in people. The same way the body and what belongs to it gives rise to material conceptions, identifications, that create fear until the day one dies, for they offer no firm hold. The Master, the Lord, the soul alone, manifests this universe and himself, protects all that exists and himself, and withdraws both the creation and himself. Apart from the soul, outside of him, hence no separate living being can be found, just as no other basis can be found for this within the self-perceived threefold splendor of the gunas that you must know as the threefold manifestation generated by the illusory energy of Maya. Someone who, perfectly conversant and experienced, is well aware of what I have now described, does not blame or praise in looking for another cause, and wanders the earth as free as the sun. When one, by direct perception, logical deduction, scriptural truth, and one's self-realization, knows that that what is inessential has a beginning and an end, one should move around in this world free from attachment." Sri Uddhava said, "Material existence is not the experience of the seer who is a soul of self-realization, nor the experience of the spiritless body that constitutes the scene. Whose experience might it be then, O Lord? The inexhaustible soul, free from the modes, is pure, self-luminous, and uncovered just like a fire, while the material body is like firewood that is without understanding. To which of the two belongs the experience of a material life in this world?" The Supreme Lord said, "As long as the soul is attracted to the body, the senses, and the life force, material existence will continue to flourish despite being meaningless to the ignorant. Even though not having a purpose of its own, the cause of mundane existence, the wheel, does not cease to exist. One keeps, like being caught in a dream, contemplating the objects of the senses and the meaninglessness associated with it. But that dreaming, presenting someone not awakened many undesirable experiences in his sleep, will certainly not confound the one who awakened. Lamentation, elation, fear, anger, greed, confusion, hankering and search, one observes with the birth and death of the false ego, and is not seen with the soul that does not take birth or die. The individual soul of identification, with his attention directed at the body, the senses, the life force, and the mind, assumes, depending the gunas and the karma, his form within the great universal self. With the lead, the sutra of the complete of nature, thus very differently denominated as a dog, ape, or human being, he then, controlled by time, moves around in material existence. A sober sage, free from desire, moving around in this world, will, with a sort of transcendental knowledge sharpened by worship, cut with this, without a firm basis, in false ego being represented in the many forms of the mind, the speech, the life force, and the bodily functions. Spiritual knowledge, jnana, entails the discrimination of spirit and matter and is nourished by scripture and penance, personal experience, historical accounts, and logical inference. It is based upon that what is there in the beginning, what stays the same in between, and what remains in the end of this creation, namely the time and ultimate cause of Brahman, the absolute truth. Just like gold alone being present before it is processed, is present when it is processed, and is also present in the final product of the processing, I am present in different disguises with the gunas processing of this creation. My dearest, this spirit of wisdom, this transcendental intelligence, in its three states of wakefulness, sleep, and unconscious sleep, constitutes, with its manifestation in relation to the three natural basic qualities as the causing of rajas, the cause of tamas, and the causal agent of sattva, the fourth factor, the gold or turiya, that as an independent variable stands for the single absolute truth of each of them. That what was absent before is absent afterwards and is not there independently in between is but a designation, a reference. Whatever that was created and is known by something else is actually only a reference to that something else. That is how I see it. Even though this creation, which appears with the transformations of the mode of passion, does not really exist, it thus shines forth as a reference to the absolute truth standing in its own light, as the Brahman, the impersonal form of God, of the variety of senses, their objects, the self, and the transformations of the five elements. When one, by discriminating this way, has achieved clarity about the absolute of the spiritual truth, one must, wisely speak against the opposite of falsely identifying oneself, cut with the doubt regarding the soul, and, in the contentment of one's own spiritual happiness, desist from all lusty, unregulated matters. The body, made of earth, is not the true self, nor are the senses, their gods, or the life air, the external air, water, fire, or a mind only interested in matter, nor is the intelligence the true self, or material consciousness, the I that considers itself the doer, the eater, the earth, material things, or the restrained, the universal primeval state of equilibrium. What would the merit be of someone who, by the meditative control of the senses, which are manifestations of the gunas, properly has distinguished my abode or personal identity? Or whom would he blame when the senses are agitated? What difference would it make to the sun whether the clouds gather or disperse? Just as the sky itself is not affected by the coming and going qualities of the atmosphere, fire, water, and earth, or by the qualities of the seasons, of heat and cold, also the imperishable Supreme remains free from the influence of sattva, rajas, and tamas, the modes at the foundation of the I concept of material existence. One must nevertheless, by firm bhakti yoga unto me, ban all the impurity of passion from one's mind until the contamination by the modes has been eliminated that was produced by the deluding material energy. The same way a disease that was treated imperfectly time and again returns and gives a man trouble, also a mind not purified of its karmic contamination will torment an inexperienced yogi who is still of all kinds of attachment. Imperfect yogis, who are commanded by impediments in the form of the human beings, family members, disciples, etc., sent to them by the 30 gods, will, by their perseverance in their previous life, once again in a new life, engage in the practice of yoga, but nevermore be entangled in fruitful activities. A normal living being, affected by the work he performs, his karma, impelled by sometimes this and then again that impulse, remains in that position until the moment he dies. But someone intelligent is, despite being situated in the material position, not that fickle, because he, with the experience of the happiness he found, gave up his material desire. someone whose consciousness is fixed in the true self does not give it a moment's thought whether he is standing, sitting, walking or lying down, urinating, eating food or doing whatever else that manifests from his conditioned nature. When one is intelligent, one does not take anything else but the soul for essential. Whenever such a one faces the not really independently existing matters of the senses, he from his logic denies them their separateness, so that they are like the things of a dream that disappear when one wakes up. The soul is not something one accepts or rejects that comes and goes, but the ignorance resulting in a material body that you in many forms under the influence of karma and guna accepted as an inextricable part of yourself, my best one, ultimately dissolves again in simply that spiritual vision. Just as the rising sun puts an end to the darkness in the human eye, without creating that what exists, also a clever and thorough search for my pure truth puts an end to the darkness of someone's intelligence. This self-luminous, unborn, immeasurable greatness of understanding, who is aware of everything, is the one without a second in whom words find their closure and by whom impelled speech and the life airs are moving. Whatever notion of duality one might have of the Supreme Soul is nothing but a figment of the mind. For such an idea there is no other ground than one's own identified self. The explanations in terms of good and bad offered by the so-called scholars of the meaning of this in names and forms perceivable duality that unmistakably consists of the five elements are completely in vain. The body of a yogi who, with a lack of experience, tries to engage in the practice of yoga may be hindered by rising disturbances. In that case, the following rule of conduct is prescribed. Some disturbances may be overcome by postures, asanas, combined with concentration exercises, dharana. Others can be defeated by penances, tapas, mantras and medicinal herbs. Certain inauspicious matters one can overcome step by step by constantly thinking of me, Vishnu Smarana, by loudly or silently honoring my names and such, japa, sankirtana, and by following in the footsteps of the masters of yoga. Some yogis keep their bodies under control and make them fit by focusing on health, employing different methods and exercises for the sake of material perfection. It goes without saying that good health should not be worshipped when such an endeavor is useless, when one is very old, for instance. For in matters of the body, one is subject to decay, just like a fruit on a tree. Although the material body of someone regularly practicing yoga will attain fitness, being intelligent, my devotee does not put faith in such yoga and will eventually give it up. The yogi who, free from desires, takes to my shelter and practices this process of yoga, experiences the inner happiness of the soul and accepts no defeat by disturbances.